Let's open our Bibles to Ecclesiastes chapter 5, verse number 8, and continue our look at this book, which I call a midlife crisis, or let's strike out the mid, a life crisis journal. I think it's written by a person, Hezekiah, in my estimation, who was wrestling with the idea that death was coming and he could do nothing about it. And even when he applied wisdom to the situation, he still realized, I can't change the fact that I'm going to die. And he comes to the ultimate conclusion, which I think is always important for us to start with. And that is, when everything's said and done, we need to fear God, that is, pay him respect, and keep his commandments, that is, do what he told us to do in his word. Why? Because all of us are going to give an account to him one of these days for what we've done with this gift of life. So in his writing of this journal, he adds some proverbial things, some advice that is based on his own observance of what's going on and how it ought to be handled. And in Ecclesiastes 5:8, he writes this. If you see in a province the oppression of the poor and the violation of justice and righteousness, which of course you do see that from time to time, do not be amazed at the matter. For the high official is watched by a higher, and there are yet higher ones over them. So one of the reasons that we're supposed to have a divided government in this country is our founding fathers understood that no one should operate outside of accountability. There should always be someone looking over your shoulder to make sure you would do things the right way. Because if you don't have accountability, what happens is people will get self-centered and egotistical and narcissistic, and they will oppress others for their own benefit. And they will violate what is right and just. So if you don't have accountability, don't be surprised when bad things happen. Now, the next thing that he says, though, on this topic is verse number 9. This is gain for a land in every way, a king committed to cultivated fields. Now, of course, in their system, the highest government official was the king. Now, who did he answer to? Well, he answered to two groups. First, he answered to God. That was the most important one. But he also answered to the people, because they were supposed to be his focus. And so if you've got a king that is committed to making sure that the fields are cultivated, we can expand this to our own situation. If you've got a federal government, say, you know, the president, the Senate, the Congress, the House of Representatives, if you've got leadership up there in Washington that's committed to keeping the fields productive, the factories operating, the stores selling their products, if you've got leadership that's committed to that, then that's going to be beneficial to the land as a whole. But if you don't have that, if you have a leadership that's only looking out for themselves, you know, how can they not just simply attain power, but maintain power? And I'm afraid that's exactly where we're at today, where we've got a couple of political parties, and each of them seems to be only focused on keeping their party in power. When you've got that sort of selfish governance going on, it spells doom for the people as a whole. And so that's what he's writing about, is you've got to have leadership accountable and on board with what's best for everyone, not just themselves. Verse number 10, he who loves money will not be satisfied with money, nor he who loves wealth with his income. This is also vanity. And all of us have seen this true, that with many people, there are exceptions, yes, but with many people, the more they get, the more they seem to want more. Their greed just increases the more that they get. Just do this as an experiment. Ask somebody that only makes minimum wage, what is wealthy? And they'll probably talk about somebody that makes tons more money than them. You know, their boss or somebody else that's a millionaire. Ask a millionaire who's wealthy, and they'll probably point to a billionaire. So it's always related to where you're at in the scale. Verse 11 says, when goods increase, they increase who eat them. And what advantage has their owner but to see them with his eyes? Now, what's the pragmatic of this? If you get a raise in income, most people will start spending that raise. And so all they do is they increase their expenditures. And so they don't really solve their issue of living within their means. Sometimes they're already in debt. And so instead of paying down on that debt when they have increased income, they just add more debt to it. So this is a proverbial warning against thinking that money is the answer to your problems, because attitude adjustment is the more important thing. Verse number 12, sweet is the sleep of a laborer, whether he eats little or much, but the full stomach of the rich will not let him sleep. Now, the contrast here is this. A rich person who still wants more. He can't sleep at night because he's trying to figure out, how do I get more? And even though he went to bed with a full stomach, he's still thinking, how can I get more? So his life is focused on wealth. Whereas a laborer, you know, a day-to-day guy, a person who puts in a day's work and gets paid for a day's work and then spends that money for his sustenance, you know, and probably doesn't have much to put aside besides that. If he's contented with that, then he's going to have a good night's sleep. He's not going to be worried because he's getting what he needs. That's the point between the two, the difference in the contrast here. Verse number 13, there is a grievous evil that I have seen under the sun. Riches were kept by their owner to his hurt. And then those riches were lost in a bad venture. So there are some people, they just get and get and get and get and get and get. And we've talked about this earlier in the book. But they never enjoy any of that. They just keep putting it away, putting it away, putting it away. Kind of like Scrooge in the Christmas Carol story. You know, he didn't enjoy what he had. He just kept adding to it. And then the proverb here says, and then suddenly those riches were gone because of a bad business venture. They're just gone. And so all of that work that he put in was worthless. He is a father of a son, but he has nothing in his hand. So the idea here is apparently he had a family, but now that all the stuff that he's been saving up is gone, because he wasn't really enjoying it anyway, now he's got nothing to give to his son. And that was one of the most horrendous things a person could think of in the past. Verse 15, he came from his mother's womb. As he came from his mother's womb, he shall go again. Naked as he came, and shall take nothing for his toil that he may carry away in his hand. Now, we hear this sometimes in contexts of funeral services. Sometimes it's a quote from Job's words, you know, naked I came from my mother's womb, naked I will return, not to his mother's womb, but rather to the dust from which he came. When we die, the only thing that goes out of this world into the next is our personality, our soul, the real us. We don't get to take our bank accounts. We don't get to take our possessions. Doesn't even matter if you do like the pharaohs of old and have all these servants carry your goodies into your tomb with you, because that just means you're going to be sealed in there with your rotting body. And then tomb robbers will come and get them later, or museum people will come and get them later. You don't get to take them into your eternal life. So the point here is, you only get to enjoy the things you accumulate here in this life, with the people that you live through in this life. And if you don't do that, what was the point? Verse 16, this also is a grievous evil. Just as he came, so shall he go. What gain is there for him who toils for the wind? See, what good did it do for him to accumulate all that stuff, not enjoy any of it? Because once you're dead, you're done. Makes me think about the story that Jesus told about the man who had a really good growing season. He was, you know, already stingy. You could tell that in the story. And so he gets too much to put into his barns. And he says, what am I supposed to do? Well, I tell you what I'll do. I will tear down my current grain storage facilities, build bigger grain storage facilities, and then I'll fill it with this really good harvest. And then I'll say to my soul, eat and drink, for you have everything you need. And then Jesus says in the story, plot twist. Well, he didn't say those words, but that's what it is. Plot twist. Guess what happens next? The guy dies that night. And then who gets his stuff? Not him, somebody else. And so here is the Ecclesiastes writer, King Hezekiah, I think, reminding us this again is just proof that you can't control the situation. You can't control life any more than you can control wind. You can't grab it and shape it and jam it into a box for later. It has to be lived as it happens. Verse 17, moreover, all his days he eats in darkness, in much vexation and sickness and anger. So this type of person that we're talking about here, he's working, 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 working. He's a workaholic. And he's putting it all in storage. He's not enjoying it. And so he's getting up in the morning before the sun is up. And he works all day long, whether he's sick, and he gets frustrated with things that happen throughout the day. Sometimes he gets mad about the things that happen during the day. Then he comes home after the sun's gone down, and he eats something, and then he goes to bed, and he gets up and repeats the process. That's not any way to live, folks. So the book of Proverbs and the book of Ecclesiastes have a reminder to us that life needs to be approached with balance. Yes, we do need to work and not be lazy bums and depend on other people to just give us handouts. That's not appropriate. If we are physically capable of working and taking care of our own bills, that's what we ought to be doing. But we shouldn't also be just working ourselves to death and never enjoying anything because, you know, we're saving for later. Because that's not appropriate either. Because you don't know how much later you have. Life needs to be enjoyed as it's lived. Listen to this next part, which is one of his little mini conclusions, his little M-I-N-I conclusions. Verse 18, behold, what I have seen to be good and fitting is to eat and drink and find enjoyment in all the toil with which one toils under the sun the few days of his life that God has given him, for this is his lot. Everyone also to whom God has given wealth and possessions and power to enjoy them, and to accept his lot and rejoice in his toil, this is the gift of God. For he will not remember the days of his life because God keeps him occupied with joy in his heart. Now that last line there is sometimes misunderstood in English. The point he's making is this. Life is hard for the most part because we live in a fallen world. Part of the curse was that we were going to have to work, repeat, work, repeat, work, repeat until death takes us. That's just part of the curse. But it can be work, enjoy with your family and your friends, repeat. Work, then enjoy with your family and friends, repeat. Because if you have that sort of lifestyle, then the bad days are going to be forgotten in light of the good days and the good moments, because you're having happiness along the way. And I know I keep repeating this because I'm living in your past, okay? When I'm recording this, we are still 10 days from Christmas. And my wife and I enjoy watching the George C. Scott presentation of the Christmas Carol. And what's the point of that whole story? It's to remind people that life is to be lived in the moment, to be enjoyed with your family and friends around you, because you lose if you don't live. And so I hope that you are enjoying the gift of God in life, and not just being overwhelmed by the work that does need to be done. Okay? So don't be a workaholic. Chapter number 6. There is an evil that I've seen under the sun. And when the word evil appears in our English text here, it's the word ra'ah. It has the idea of rottenness, stinkiness. It's a pain. It's bad, something you don't necessarily like. It's not always a moral evil, is what I'm pointing out here. So there is a rotten situation, shall we say, that I've seen under the sun, and it lies heavy on mankind. A man to whom God gave wealth, possessions, honor, so that he lacks nothing of all that he desires. And yet God does not give him power to enjoy them, but a stranger enjoys them. This is vanity. This is a grievous evil. Now, what he means by this is here is somebody who in their life have the energy in which to get all this stuff. And they do. But then they die. They don't live long enough to enjoy any of what they worked for. And he says, that's a sad situation. That should make you sad to think about that happening to anybody. Verse 3, if a man fathers 100 children and lives many years. So here's a guy that he's got lots and lots of kids. So a big family. And he lives a good long life. So that the days of his years are many, but his soul is not satisfied with life's good things. So he's not happy with life. He's griping about life. He's not making the most of life, complaining all the time. And here's the other part. He also has no burial. Now, how in the world could that happen if he's got 100 kids? Because he managed to grump his way through life in such a way that none of them want anything to do with him. And all of us know people that are in this sort of situation. They they seem to be perpetually angry and upset and full of complaints all the time. They critique everyone and everything. And what they do is they separate themselves from people. They isolate themselves. And so that's what they're picturing here. That's what the writer of Ecclesiastes is picturing. He's a person who he had the potential. He had lots of family members. He had a good long life. And yet he didn't enjoy it. He just complained about it. And he estranged himself from everybody so that once he did die, nobody was there to bury him. Nobody was interested. It makes me sad from time to time. I've had people who, sometimes it wasn't their fault. I'm going to make that point right here. But they've been estranged from their family. And they died. And those family members have said to me, well, we don't need a service. We don't want to spend any money on them. We're just going to have them cremated, and that's it. We're done. And it hurts my heart to have that happen to some people. And sometimes it's been because when they were younger, in their earlier years, they did not live properly. They did not live a good life, and they had estranged themselves from their family members. And so their family members were basically not interested in celebrating their life later. But the person had been redeemed by Christ, and so we always had a service for them, even though the family didn't want it. We'd have our own memorial service for that person because we know that they were still valued. But the Proverbs here in the book of Ecclesiastes reminds us that what you do with your life now determines how you will be viewed when your death comes. And so here he pictures this guy that he gets no burial. Last part of verse 3 says, I say that a stillborn child is better off than him. So a child that died in the womb is better off than a person who lived a long life, but not well. Verse 4, for it, meaning the child, comes in vanity, and it goes in darkness, and in darkness its name is covered. A lot of times when babies were miscarried, born premature, or born with, you know, just a dead body coming out, because they didn't make it to the eighth day of life, they never got a name. And that's a really sad situation. And I feel for parents who lose children by miscarriage. And I tell you, my own personal feeling is you ought to name that child, and you ought to thank God that they were there momentarily in your life. And my anticipation is that one of these days you'll get to meet them, because I think they'll get a chance to live that life eventually. But here, the Proverbs of Ecclesiastes is picturing that as a really sad situation. Verse 5, moreover, it's not seen the sun or known anything, and yet it finds rest rather than he. So the stillborn child has more rest than a long-lived person who didn't make the most of life. That's the point. Verse 6, even though he should live 1,000 years twice over, yet enjoy no good, do not all go to the one place. So everybody dies. And the difference is always got to do with what did you do with the life that you had? Not how long it was, but what did you do with it? Verse 7, all the toil of a man is for his mouth, yet his appetite is not satisfied. Now that's a negative proverb, talking about negative attitudes. That some of these people, all they do is work, 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 and yet they never get enough to be content. What advantage has the wise man over the fool? What does the poor man have who does not have to conduct himself before the living? Excuse me, let's read that again. And what does the poor man have who knows how to conduct himself before the living? Better is the sight of the eyes than the wandering of the appetite, but this also is vanity and a striving after wind. So again, the Proverbs here are pointing at this idea, what are you doing with life? Not how long is it, not what happened in it, but what did you do with it to make the most of it? Verse 10, whatever has come to be has already been named. It's known what man is, and that he's not able to dispute with one stronger than he, that is God. The more words, the more vanity. And what is the advantage to man? For who knows what is good for man while he lives the few days of his vain life, which he passes like a shadow? For who can tell man what will be after him under the sun? So there's nobody that can tell you how your life is going to turn out now. They can't tell you about what later is going to bring. The only thing that we have is the right now. And so the proverb writer in the book of Ecclesiastes is basically advising us, make the most of your life as you live it.